Sports USA presents Classic Conversations with Joe Morgan, featuring some of Joe's greatest interviews with entertainment icons, Hall of Famers, and champions. Now, Classic Conversations with Joe Morgan on Sports USA.
Welcome back to Conversations with Joe Morgan. It is an unbelievable pleasure today for me to have my guest on the show. I mean, I've admired this guy for a long period of time from afar. We've been friends for I don't know how long. When I say this, I mean one of the great, great actors of all time. You know, we talk about Hall of Fame. You know, that means you're one of the best players of all time. But this is one of the best all-time actors in the history of motion pictures. I'm speaking of Louis Cameron Gossett Jr., and he's obviously my favorite. Good morning, Lou.
Good morning, my brother. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. We've run at each other in airports. We've talked about all the things you've done in your life and so forth. But today I just want people to know Lou Gossett, you know, growing up, why you decided, you know, to end up in your acting career and how you got there. So talk a little bit about growing up.
All right. Just before I start, I just want you to know I have a little thing I got from you. Before I get on stage or in front of the camera, I pump my elbow a couple of times.
You know, you gave me a gift. I'm glad you brought that up. Before we even start with that, you gave me a gift, I don't know, man, 20 years ago. It was a necklace with the continent of Africa.
It's called the Muntu, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I still have that. I still love it. I don't wear it as much, but it's still one of my treasured, you know, items that, you know, I have in my collection. So
I'm going to reissue that because my life has been gone in that direction for so many reasons. You know, I believe very much in God.
Right.
I believe there's no force on this planet that's stronger than that. Right. And he's kind of flexing his muscles. He's pumping his elbow now with all these storms and all these,
yes,
these messages to pay attention to this planet, to our children. But I grew up right after the Depression, you know. Nobody had anything. Even the rich folks didn't have much. You know, they could afford a ham sandwich, and we had to have, you know, something else. So, but anyway, I came up in a neighborhood in Brooklyn where everybody had to rely on everybody else. And I think about today's circumstances, about the homeless and the gangbangers. They were gangbangers. You know, there was the mafia and all that stuff. And that's what they did. They had to do by crook or crook. They had to get their say, get their message and their identity in America. That's when America was growing into this homogeneous, diverse melting pot. But we people, my mothers and fathers, my great-grandmothers, and all those kinds of things, we were together as a family. And we had a neighborhood that was pretty cool. We could keep the doors open.
Right.
If somebody was homeless around there, then we'd put them in the bathtub, give them some hand-me-downs, and tell them to open their mouth and put the food in there, and send them on their way. Mm-hmm. There was something very strong and very American and very spirited. That's what put me on the map. As the kids, we didn't have much. We had a broomstick handle. We'd take the broom off, and that was our baseball. We called it stickball.
Right.
And we had chalk. The girls had chalk and ropes from the clothing lines, and they jumped rope, and they played potsy. And people were really happy. Didn't have a whole lot, but a whole lot of camaraderie. I grew up in that kind of neighborhood. It wasn't a black neighborhood. It was everybody's neighborhood. Right. Everybody was poor.
Lou, I've heard that about Brooklyn, and it's amazing. Sandy Koufax was on the show, and
he talked about it.
People, yeah, well, Brooklyn, it seems that there was something special there that wasn't necessarily around the rest of the country about just the community. You know, like you say, not a black community, not an Italian community, just a community.
Yeah, that's America, man. That's what America, by gentle suggestion, I'm trying to do with my life now. As a result of being coming from that renaissance in politics, in sports. Of course, that's why it was natural for Jackie Robinson to be the first black out of Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Happy Felton, not whole gang. And I was one of the kids in baseball, along with Sandy and a whole bunch of others. What's his name, Mazzilli?
Yeah, Doug Mazzilli. Yeah.
Doug Mazzilli. We all kind of came together. I grew up with people like R.C. Owens and all these people. We grew up on the streets with our U.S. kids. You know, and we played stickball, our heroes. And one day, I want to tell you something, and maybe you can identify, because they don't know what it was natural to them. It was almost predominantly Jewish, but there was the synagogues, there was the cathedrals, and we played stickball and punchball and Ringo Livio and Hide and Go Seek, we did that together. And for some wonderful reason, I became popular. I became the president of the junior high school. I'm going to be the first awardee of one of the successful people from Mark Twain Junior High School. And those principals and those teachers, I found out here recently, ran from the blacklist. It wasn't communists. It was left-wing unionists. And they came out of the universities and all the big buildings, and they changed their names, and they sequestered themselves in New York City, especially Brooklyn, Queens. And so I grew up with their children, and they taught me. So I had college professors, starting almost in the first grade, all the way through high school. And they created this ideal community, composite. Out of it came people like Arthur Miller, Sandy Koufax, you know, myself, Neil Simon, Woody Allen, Carole King, everybody. It's just a whole bunch of us. And we kind of ran this place. That's where Jackie came from. And that was a wonderful society of people. And I started in theater. And I didn't know anything about no theater. But I did something in my English class. I read some Shakespeare or something for that English teacher. Turned out to be the late Gustav Blumberg, which nobody would know. But he was a Broadway director and actor and producer. So what did he say? Part of the society was, he called me in and he said, you know what, they're looking for a young kid to play a lead in this Broadway show. I'd never seen a play, except in high school, you know. They're looking for it. They can't find anybody. So tell your mama to take you down there Sunday. What can you lose?
Right.
That's how I got in the show business.
I'm speaking with Lou Gossett, Jr., and Lou, I was just noticing this. Now you're telling me why. You've been in show business for 7 decades.
Yes, sir.
So that tells me you started at an early age. So
I started at the age of 16.
Right.
I opened on Broadway in a play called Take a Giant Step, 1953. And the rest is history. Because of that society that put me up on their shoulders and made me the president of the school and encouraged me that there's no such thing as impossible, to go for it. All I had was, you know, chicken feet and stuff and rice. My father was a fisherman, and one day he caught 200 pounds of codfish and gave it to each person in the door, and he became the first hero. Mm. So that's the way we were, and I think that's the way we got to be today in America. So to make a long story short, I have this foundation now. It's called E-Racism Foundation. And it's based on instructing our children how to get along with one another and have respect for one another, respect for the opposite sex, and respect for someone who has another ethnic beliefs and religions, so that we can get along. It's called conflict resolution at a young age, so that a problem doesn't exist anymore. We need to grow now to this compassion for one another.
And that's a great way of putting it. I think that's some of the other stuff has gotten old and rusty. We need to change our approaches. So obviously someone like
grow.
You can lead that charge.
Yeah, it's like Quincy says, everything must change.
Everything must change. You know, let's talk a little bit about after you got started in, you know, Broadway and decide, how did you get to Hollywood? I guess that's the...
Well, it was a natural transition. You know, everything was in New York at the time. All the money, all the movies, all the actors, all the directors and writers, we came off of Broadway. And that's the Marlon Brandos, the Steve McQueens, the Paul Newmans, the Sidney Poitiers. We all were poured together at the Actors Studio and other schools. Mm-hmm. You know, so our breakfast was an Italian sandwich, you know, hero sandwich, and a big bottle of milk. And we'd study in storerooms and storefronts, and finally we had a studio. But we studied, and we were serious. We learned about life and how to do this the best we can. And we learned from people like Idia Kazan and John Garfield and all of those particular people. We were one family. And that was the beginning of Hollywood when it moved from New York to California. But the mentality of New York was one thing. The mentality of Hollywood was another. In the first chapter of my book, An Actor and a Gentleman is called, and you'll get a copy.
Thank you.
We revered one another so much. There was a great poker game I talk about underneath on Wednesdays and matinees, and there was an evening show. And a Saturday, me and Paul Newman and Sidney Poitier and whoever was around would sit around poker. They had more money than we did. So sometimes they just, you know, bully us and take the money. One time, I was watching, I was just calling, and Sidney and Paul were raising everybody out except the three of us were there. And finally, it was a 7-card poker thing, right? And Sidney was looking. He just knew he had the pot, and so did Paul Newman. And I looked up at my seventh card, and I had four aces. And Sidney Poitier had a full house with jacks, and Paul Newman had a flush. And they looked at me and wondered, why is this little guy in this movie? So finally, I did it, and it was a pile of money. And I grabbed a pile of money, except for Paul Newman owes me today. I'll get it when I get to heaven. He owes me $350 because he had run out of money. I won that pot.
That is a great, great story.
But man, that money lasted me for a year, brother.
It was well, so- see, that's... Those kind of friendships, and like you say, that teaches you more about life than anything else, just being around all these different ethnic groups and
everybody was everybody, man.
Yeah.
We were all poor together, man. We never forgot it. We grew up together. Yeah. We played ball together. Yeah. And those friends who are still alive today, like the Neil Sedakas, for example, I gave them a tribute and almost broke down saying, one day we had our heroes, right? And in the old days, the heroes were Superman, Captain Marvel, Roy Rogers, Gene Autry, Hopalong Cassidy. And I said, you know, wait a minute. You guys look like those heroes, and they don't look like me. You know what they said? Just a matter of fact, it don't matter. You're going to be Superman today. That spoke volumes to my thing of being second class at the age of, what, 8 years old? Mm-hmm. And I haven't forgotten it since then. But since running across, you know, racism in other towns in California and Mississippi, but I'm set.
Right.
You can't change me. Yeah. We need that again today.
We definitely need that. And I mean, it's just now I see why you're who you are. You know what I mean? I just saw the finished product, you know, when we met. You know, you were already an adult. You're already set in your ways. You already knew who you were. But now I can see how you got to be who you are.
Yeah,
you know?
From my roots, from my family.
Right.
Which was totally, I mean, Thanksgiving was, we had to fight over the drumstick, you know, but we were all together.
Yeah.
We were all together. My first cousin who I grew up with, Robert Gossett, he's in Closer. Mm-hmm. I think it's called Major Crimes now.
Right, I see him.
Fabulous actor, and that's my that's my blood. But what were we fight over? Was drumsticks and stuff. What part of the bed do we get to sleep in? Because Grandma ran us, and everybody who was younger had to get a job, you know. So the elder women ran us, and they ran us, you know, of course, with the old switch. I know you know much more know about that.
Yes, of course. Of course.
Well, now it's a little violent, but that worked.
But what is the spare the rod, spoil a child, you know?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
You know, to make a long story short, my foundation, I'm trying to open up a center called the Shamba Center, S-H-A-M-B-A. It's a Swahili word meaning farm. To take kids of the different ethnic origins, starting at about 8 years old, if not younger, and teach them certain things that I got from my grandmama in that society. You cannot walk out of the door unless you first have love and respect for your elders, respect for yourself, respect for the opposite sex, of a certain dress code. You have to be clean. I had to shave. Right. I had to comb my hair when I had it. conflict resolution. If somebody's different from you, it's an addition. Positively, not negatively. There's no enemy. God is in charge all of the time. So we can humbly go out that door that way and get to school. We're a better student.
I'm speaking with Louis Gossett Jr. You know, you said the name of your book, and I'm looking forward to getting it, Actor and a Gentleman.
Yes, sir.
Of course, most people think of you, you know, may think of you first, not me, but a lot of people may think of you first in that movie, An Officer and a Gentleman. You know, along those lines, you know, all the great work that you've done, you know, you've been in just about every movie. I see the Skin Games on almost every day now on the Western Channel, just so you'll know.
I get the check in the mail, brother.
It's on every day. But all the great, you know, parts you've had, do you have one favorite part, you know, on one side, you know, the comedy side, one side on the dramatic side, one side, on, you know, do you have a favorite part?
I have a couple of them, thank God. Of course, the Skin Game was one when Jim Garner reached down, an American Indian brother of mine, to be his partner in Skin Game. I had the time of my life. He welcomed me to Hollywood. Then there's, of course, Fiddler in Roots, and Officer and Gentleman. Those are the obvious ones, and Iron Eagle. But the couple of parts that I really have a great satisfaction having been part of is one is called Enemy Mine.
Yes.
Six hours of makeup to do, but the project had to do with two enemies who become friends. Lifetime
like
friends.
On a foreign planet.
On a separate planet.
Yeah.
And I had to create myself from scratch this lizard-like creature with full of lizard skin and do a performance of being somebody's mentor and brother with the philosophies I just spoke about. There's a little funny story about that. I was getting a little rash because of the makeup, because of spirit gum and stuff, you know, and prosthetics. So I said, well, we've got 6 months of work to do. Maybe we should call the doctor to get me some cream to put on after you take the makeup off. Now, here we are. We started twice with Officer Joe, with Enemy Mine. First, we started in Iceland, where that volcano is, you know, that stopped the air traffic a couple of years ago.
Yes.
So there were no doctors and no cream up there in Iceland. So they had to go and find somebody, and they found this little freshman, this little girl about 5'4", from med school in Reykjavik. They put her in a helicopter, and they didn't tell her nothing. They put her in my dressing room, and they come out with all that lizard skin, right? And I said, hi, Doc, I'm the one with the skin problem. They had to catch her. She was panicking. Ah! And explained to her, this is the movie, that's makeup. But she had no idea. What do you want me to do with that? That man, he must be, you know, contagious. But that story was wonderful. And the other story is to have the honor to play Anwar Sadat, the president of Egypt.
Yeah, right.
Who decided, who was a man of war, who became a man of peace when his brother died, and stepped foot in Jerusalem. That was a great honor. I was chosen by him, who had a little secret collection of African-American movies. So he had seen all of that stuff, and I was one of his favorites, which is a blessing. I wish I had known it when he was alive. But I was able to give him a tribute in doing that performance. Now it's time to give back. And that's what I want to do 24/7. There are movies coming out, but it seems, Joe, that... you know how we have these angers and these resentments because of racism, et cetera. You know how baseball had to be the same thing through, you know, Satchel Paige and Jackie.
Yeah.
But I got the chance to meet Nelson Mandela. I produced, co-produced the first movie produced in South Africa after he came out of Robben Island. So as fortune would have it, I spent a good half hour alone with him. First 10 minutes was dry mouth. And then finally I said, sir, the whole... world was holding their breath to see how you were good be when you came out of a prison that had you in prison for 27 years. And you came out with a smile. How did you come to that position? He got a twinkle in his eye and he said, there was a much bigger picture.
Oh,
and
man.
The bigger picture is mankind needs to bury the hatchet, as it were, to have peace, to cooperate with one another for the salvation of this planet. Because nobody's going to win anything if it goes away. And war will help it go away. Our ignorance of the weather, of all kinds of stuff, makes it a no-brainer that nobody wins a conflict. There's no winner or loser. So that maybe we should drop all the other agendas and concentrate on the salvation of the planet and the mentorship of our children so it gets better one generation at a time. Otherwise, if we're dealing with anything else, we all may as well be in one of these great big 747 airplanes at 30,000 feet, and the plane is rapidly getting ready to crash, but the people inside the plane are fighting over who's going to be in first class. So
you know,
it's beginning to resonate all the way to awards from the NAACP and the Urban League and now the city of Los Angeles.
I mean, that's amazing. I mean, just your story about Mandela, the fact that he was in there for 27 years.
Had no resentment.
And he
went to the
Truth Commission. No resentment. Well, that tells you a lot about him, obviously, and that's why he was the leader that he was.
That's why he's a man of history and important for us to remember.
Unbelievable.
What
yes.
that message is, that's legacy. So I believe in him. I believe in the legacy. So my foundation is called the E-Racism Foundation. You can look it up at in the computer. It's eracismfoundation.org. That's my 24/7 thing. I have to be the example of what I'm talking about. So there's certain gestures I recommend. In your sport of baseball,
yes,
I'm going to make a gentle thing to the commissioner as a result of the... by the way, I have a small piece, and I have the World Series ring for the Arizona Diamondbacks. I'm one of the owners. That's piece of trivia.
Oh, okay.
And they gave me the ring, and 3 years later, we won the World Series. And my partner, Jerry Colangelo and Mel Schultz.
Well, Jerry's a very close friend of mine.
He's an amazing gentleman.
Now, I know you had to play some baseball.
Yeah, I was invited, me along with Sandy. I was invited when I was in college to try out for the Knicks, and Sandy was invited there too. And I had a little minor problem. I threw too many curveballs, but he was the pitcher on the Park Views, it was called, and I was the pitcher on the Sugar Rays, Sugar Ray Leonard, Sugar Ray Robinson.
Sugar Rays, okay.
And we were nose to nose in every sport. He was probably the greatest athlete I've ever seen on any sport: football, baseball, basketball. He used to take rebounds in the basketball labs with the Knicks, and they wanted him there. The Dodgers wanted him. Everybody wanted him. So he's one of the greatest people. He may not even remember me because I wasn't bald-headed and handsome at the time.
I guarantee he remembers you.
Superior athlete.
You're not easy to forget. Either way, I guarantee he would remember you.
Yeah, but he was the man.
Let's jump back a little bit.
I had the defense against him, and I called him every name in the sun, and he just laughed at me and just scored again. Threw curveballs. Sent 4 or 5 people to the hospital, so nobody would dig in, right?
Yeah.
So I said, something got me, and I closed my eyes and gritted my teeth, and he came through the ball, and I closed my eyes and hit a double. He don't remember that either, but I was that said volumes for my life. I got a double off of Sandy Koufax. But he
probably the greatest
the
left-handed pitcher in the history of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Let's
jump back into your...
I heard the noise, and my old manager said, run.
I was speaking with Lou Gossett Jr. Lou, let's jump back into something that, you know, kind of close to all of us and kind of follows the Mandela theme. The series roots.
Yes, sir.
You know, how, you know, getting involved in that, you know, because being honest with you, watching it was difficult for me.
Yeah.
Was it difficult for you to portray Fiddler and to do all the things and watch all the things that were going on there?
Well, the series was cathartic. You know what that word is? Cathartic.
Yes.
It was something that we always talk about in our homes, and we have to whisper about it.
Right.
Now it's on international television. That's Schindler's List, bigger than Schindler's List. That's an evolution of a story that our children didn't know. And not today, our children don't know it either. They've played it again, but it's different now. But it was such a catapult into our existence on American television and in America. It woke us up. There was a lot of riots in schools, and then there were some marches and stuff. But we were aware of people being mistreated. Now it's on the top of the table. It's time for that foundation.
I know it was a defining moment, not in my kid's life. You know, I'd already, you know, kind of been emotionally involved, you know, going away playing baseball in little towns where I was the only African-American guy on my team in Durham, you know, so
I understand
what that was like. Yeah, but, you know, my young kids, and it was great because I didn't know how to get that to them. You don't want them to give it to them the wrong way because animosity builds up.
I understand.
But you want them to be aware of the history.
The
of,
bigger
you know, where
picture.
They came from. Yeah.
The bigger picture. We've all had some kind of mountain to climb in order to get certain places. Right. Now it's time for us to stitch all of this together to make, first of all, democracy here in America. Right. We're supposed to be number one with that. But our backyard is finally cleaning up. It's still a little dirty. But now, at least, we're going in the right direction. That president is a great role model. We have to leave him alone and let him be the example for the world. And he's a perfect example for the world. His family is absolutely gorgeous. We have something to aspire to. It's not what he can do for us, as Kennedy says, it's what we can do for him and us.
One thought I always have about, you know, actors and so forth, how do you choose a part? You know, I'd looked at your, you know, obviously I have a lot of your movies. I've looked at this list. I could sit here for the next hour and just list the plays and the movies you've been in. Is there one thing that you haven't done that you'd like to do?
Oh, there's a lot. I have a big list. Okay. What if, you know?
Okay, give me that list.
List. Oh, there's so many things. First of all, there's Kwame Nkrumah, one of the first black presidents of the newly liberated country of Ghana. There's Jomo Kenyatta. There's Bass Reeves. You don't know who that is, Bass Reeves, R-E-E-V-E-S.
No.
But if you think about Wyatt Earp, you think about Bat Masterson and Wild Bill Hickok and all those great cowboy heroes, most successful marshal in the West was a black man with a black long handlebar mustache by the name of Bass Reeves. You can read about him in the Black West. It was called Black, Red, and Deadly. There's a couple of books that our children and none of us know about. So we need to catch up on our history, and who we know and who we are.
Right.
Then there's some wonderful stories. You know, you've seen the Vikings, you've seen the Romans, Kirk Douglas, and all that kind of stuff, and Charlton Heston. Mm-hmm. You've seen all of that. So those kids know about that. Boy, do we have some stories to tell about the Songhais and the Benin civilization, about how the first civilization was done, where they had these marketplaces and they had things that take minerals and put them in a jar full of distilled water and drink the water and cure cancer and all kinds of stuff. And the bartering system, which we've lost, is all about money now. So that the bartering system all came out of that society, a belief of outer space through the pyramids. There's so many stories to tell. I can't tell them all. But maybe I can be responsible for us going in that direction. So now that we've talked about slavery and servitude and the butler, now let's talk about some of this other stuff. This civilizations are bent on the Tuskegee Airmen was a good one, but there's a better story there. The story of Patton. Mm-hmm. Ah, that's a story I have to tell you. General Patton. And you know about that film with my best friend, the late George C. Scott.
Correct.
So, fade out, fade in, me and the great Kareem Abdul-Jabbar were MCs and hosts for a reunion at Lincoln Center in New York some 25 years, I don't know how long ago it was, for the reunion of the Black Tank Battalions, the 791st, and the other one out of Alabama, I can't remember, Black Battalion, for the reunion of those black soldiers in those tanks and the Jews that they rescued. They said, what? So let me go back and tell you the story. It started with a friendship between Eleanor Roosevelt and a woman of history by the name of Mary McLeod Bethune. They were really like sisters. At any spare moment, they were together, lunch, breakfast, and dinner, inseparable. And sometime during that relationship, Mary McLeod Bethune put a bee in Eleanor Roosevelt's bonnet and said, we're about to lose this war. Maybe we should pull the blacks in and give them some weapons and let them help. And Eleanor went back to her husband, told him to put the cutty sock down for a minute, and forced him to call General Eisenhower to start the Tuskegee Airmen and the tank battalions and the regiment armories. So the 69th Regiment Armory, the 791st was born, and Roosevelt called Eisenhower, and Eisenhower said, it's a bad idea, but I'll do it, you're the president. So he took him and gave him to Patton, who thought it was a worse idea, and tried to teach those tank battalions a lesson by sending them to North Africa against Field Marshal Rommel, the greatest tank mind in the history. Yes. And they beat him, along with the Tuskegee Airmen, who figured out what maneuvers, and they beat Field Marshal Rommel, saved the British lives, and that joke didn't work. So they put him against the panzers in Germany, in the front of the attack toward Berlin. They cut a 20-mile swash so that it was safe, but they ran out of gas. And they called back to headquarters to get some gas, and the thing called the Red Ball Express came and refueled those tanks. There were 75 trucks, 63 made it. They refueled the tanks, and they continued on. They broke first wall they broke down was Auschwitz. The second wall they broke down was Dachau. And the third wall they broke down was Auschwitz and Buchenwald. Those are three concentration camps. Now, there's a movie for you.
Yeah.
We, me and Kareem, witnessed the emotional reunion of those Jews and those soldiers.
Man.
Is that a movie or what?
You can feel the pulse of those people, I guarantee you.
So you put that information in these kids' minds, and they behave a different way.
No doubt, no doubt. You know, I got to ask these questions because I've always wondered, you know, for instance, when you get a movie, how do you decide, you know, say, let's take Enemy Mine.
Yeah.
When they send you a script, I mean, do you read the entire script?
Oh, I read it more than I almost read it 10 times. read about what it's made, how popular it could be, how significant, how difficult. I like the challenges. So I have to do something I haven't done before. I like that. I like that challenge because it brings out the best in me, just like it does for you in baseball.
Right.
Bases loaded, two out, count is 3-2, and it's the last of the ninth, and if you hit this home run, you win the game, and you've done that so many times.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Well,
give me the difficult
stuff. Yeah, no, that's interesting. But I've always wondered, because I know guys get script, or people, you know, ladies, guys, actors, actresses, they get scripts. You know, people say, well, I would like Lou Gossett to do this because he would be perfect for this part. But I'm saying this, when you read it, and you have to decide whether you'd be perfect for that part, because I think you'd be perfect for any part. I'm kind of like the guys with Superman. You can play anybody.
Yeah.
But I really believe
that's a blessing.
You know,
For a minute there, I was persona non grata, but you'll read that in the book. But the resurrection is the thing, and the continuation to grow is the most important part. I have the greatest respect for you and all your teammates.
Right.
You know, you guys did a great thing, and you guys came from everywhere to do it. From South America,
you know,
from Mexico.
That's that melting pot you're talking about.
Yeah, and you won the World Series. What a statement.
And we're all still very close.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. The same thing with the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Iron Curtain, the Steel Curtain.
Right.
So you guys, those young guys need to learn their responsibility, and that other stuff will go away. They are examples, the baseball, football, basketball players. They have not only a responsibility to be as good as they possibly can be, but as responsible as they possibly can be, because a lot of children are watching them.
When you get some free time, you know, that you can free yourself of all the obligations you have and thoughts, what do you like to do? What is your favorite Lou Gossett moments?
My favorite Lou Gossett moment is to watch all those young athletes play ball. I'd like to be Jack Nicholson.
Right.
I'd like to be in the front row and watch those young athletes do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to hang out with the young brothers and sisters.
Right.
Well, and my grandparents, my grandson, my grandchildren are. They love me to death, and I love them. So that's what I like to do. I'll go fishing from time to time and play the worst golf in the world. But I like to hang out with you guys, too.
Right.
You guys are my heroes.
Well, isn't it interesting, because we like to hang out with you. I mean, it's amazing.
Let's make that happen, man.
Yeah, but I think it's the more the discipline that it takes to be a great actor and the discipline it takes to be an athlete, I think we all respect, you know, what you have to give of yourself to become great.
You know,
there are a lot of good
players. It stopped, and we need to put it back. Those disciplines are taught by, I'm the grandparent now, and it was taught by my grandparents.
Right.
And it's been that way for generations. So kind of maybe have to go back to those thrilling days of yesterday, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Of athletes, you know, you've been around all of them, you know, the great athletes, and Kareem happens to be someone that I had a lot of respect for, because he's always been trying to, you know, bring things to the forefront, like you were talking about. He's always done that. You know, one of the things that still bothers me to this day, though, Lou, is I'm speaking with Lou Gossett Jr., is that he was never given a team to run to be the coach, and he wanted to be a coach, and that's always bothered me, you know.
That's progress, not perfection, though. A suggestion for you retired professional greats. Some of the problems these young athletes are having, on Monday they have no money, and on Tuesday they have millions, right? There's no program to teach them to make that transition properly.
No.
So I'm talking to the people at the NBA, maybe it goes to the others too, because the headlines resonate, that maybe in the contract for these new athletes, they have to have one of you veterans in that contract to show them how to make that transition.
Yeah. The NBA, I think, does a better job of trying to help them with that than maybe some of the other sports. I know Bill Russell, our great friend.
Yeah, he's a great one. He's the same one. That's why the Celtics are pretty well behaved and pretty united.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, pretty
much so. The Celtics, by example, are doing that very well. No, I see it in Indiana now, so I see it happening.
Lou, I could talk to you all day. I appreciate you taking the time to be with me today.
Well, that's a no-brainer, brother.
We'll have to do this again sometime to catch up, especially after I read your book.
You got it. And we owe each other a dinner and a talk and maybe a terrible golf game.
Yeah.
I don't play tennis anymore, so that was the last thing you asked me.
Yeah, I know. We played tennis. I don't play anymore either. My knees won't let me. But you know what? The golf game is for camaraderie. We don't care about if you shoot 90 or 100, whatever we shoot. The idea of being out there together with people you enjoy, that's what golf is all about.
But you are a brilliant baseball mind. I miss hearing you.
Thank you. I had a great time all those years. We had a great time. Okay. All right, I'm going to get in touch with you. I'll get back and I'll get in touch with you.
You got it.
Thanks a lot, man.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Classic Conversations with Joe Morgan, featuring some of Joe's greatest interviews of all time. Get them all anytime at sportsusamedia.com, iTunes, the TuneIn app for your smartphone, iHeartRadio.com, and the iHeartRadio app for your smartphone. There, you can also check out some of SportsUSA's other great podcasts, like Snake Stakes with Jake Plummer, The Rich Report with Tom and Sam Rich, Ted Sobel's Excellent Sports Adventure, and The Fred Dreyer Show. This is Sports USA